Welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hey there, and welcome back to Thundercast, ThunderTech's regular podcast. As always, I'm your host, Craig Israel, along with my co-host, Eric Krylo.
Trick or treat, am I right?
Oh, so Eric, we have a very special and spooky podcast lined up today. So as we're recording this, we're only a couple days away from Halloween, so we thought it'd be fun to have a topic that's both spooky and timely.
Ooh, interesting.
Talking about marketing, right, since that's what our audience seems to care about. So to that end, we have a very special guest on the phone today. Who is a, I'm going to say, a haunted house mogul, a champion of haunted houses. So on the phone today, we have Ryan Pluta.
Hello.
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for doing our podcast. So, Ryan, you and I used to work together years ago at a different agency. You were an account manager as a copywriter. And as I got to know you, I found out that you also had a side business of running these incredibly elaborate haunted houses.
Yeah. Actually, this is the 26th year that I've been doing that. I started it, the company, back in 1990, if you can believe it.
So that's crazy. Tell me, how did you start? You know, when did you, how did you get involved with the horror industry?
Yeah, basically, you know, when I was a kid, I was 14. I went to a local haunted house out in Copley that's no longer there, called the Haunted Valley and the Terrifying Asylum, with a friend of mine. His parents dropped us off. We went through the haunted house. I was scared to death. Of course, their parents dropped us off and weren't going to come back for 2 hours. So I was in and out in like 20 minutes. So just kind of standing around. And the owner saw me standing around, asked if I wanted a job working there. I said, hell yeah. So the next day I was the chainsaw guy that that scared me the night before, and did that the entire time and just absolutely fell in love with scaring people. And then so the next year I helped them build the haunted house. And then my senior year of high school, I took night school for small business management to try and learn, you know, how to run a business, and saved up money. So when I graduated high school, I started the business in order to pay for college, and just kind of started really small and just kind of kept growing it from there.
So what do you mean you started small? Did you like rent out a house and staff it with scary costume people?
Yeah. So there's a place out by where I live called Chippewa Valley Campground. There's a small building they had out there. So I rented the building from them, put in my haunted house event. Back then it was called the Haunted Crypt. I had a bunch of friends that said, hey, you know, come work for me. I'm not sure if I'm going to make any money or not. If I do, I'll pay you. If not, you guys mind volunteering? So I had my staff. We built it, ran it. Like that first year, I might have put 500 people through total, which by today's standards is not a lot. But back then, it was enough for me to actually pay my expenses and pay for all my materials. So the way I kind of looked at it is now I own all this stuff. So then I moved. Then I was looking to expand and go somewhere bigger. So there was a place out in Columbia Station near Strongsville called Wildwood Water Park. And I pitched the idea to them to rent the space out there. And so then I moved it from the campground out there to a much larger venue. And that's when it really started to grow.
And you've done it every year since?
Yeah. The only year that I was down, it was 2002, because some kids broke in and burned everything to the ground. So I had to start over in 2003 from scratch. But while the business was still in operation and expenses were still there, obviously.
Right.
No revenue was coming in. You know, that was fun.
So do you have any full-time employees other than yourself, or is this all seasonal workers?
Nope. Yes, it's all seasonal. I've had, you know, I have my core staff that helps me construct it, disassemble it, and manage it. You know, that always comes back there. You know, obviously they're close friends. And then, but it is a seasonal business, and just hire independent contractors to run it. And operate, you know, inside of the actors and everything. But seasonally, while we're open, I'll have, you know, 100 employees on site. You know, that'll be a mix of acting, parking, sheriff, you name it.
So going back to something you said earlier when you mentioned you had gone through a haunted house and then decided you want to start your own, was there something lacking about the haunted house that you went through, or you just saw that it could be, you know, something viable moving forward?
It just was something that I really wanted to do. You know, it was something I loved. I loved building it. And, you know, I'm going way back here. You know, I mean, I could look at myself and then go, what the hell were you doing? You know, it easily could have went horribly wrong, but no, it was just something, you know, look, I'm a kid in high school. I got to figure out how to pay for college. You know, we don't have any money. So, I decided I was going to start a business to try and do that. And luckily it accomplished that mission, I guess.
So your business now, you run a haunted house called Carnival of Horrors. People can find that at carnivalofhorrors.com. And so how big are you now?
Like I said, we have a staff of over 100 on site, 4 different attractions on site. It's come a long way. I mean, we're definitely one of the largest in Northeast Ohio for sure.
Yeah, and in you know, researching for this podcast, I read some reviews, and there's a bunch of people saying that this is one of, if not the scariest, you know, haunted house style attraction they've ever been through.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's interesting about the way that we do it? So I'm a temporary haunted house, and what that is, it means I have to build it and disassemble it every single year. So, you know, my main competitors have haunted houses and warehouses or something that's up 365 days a year. So, you know, I think, you know, the haunted houses that I grew up on were all about the scare. I mean, that was it. And so everything that we do there is still uses that strategy. Every room, everything that happens, it's how are we going to use this to scare somebody? And that's really my main focus, whether it's the lighting, it's how I hide people, it's everything about it. And I think, you know, in some of the haunted houses that are more permanent, which is the vast, vast majority, it's evolved a bit more onto the sets and wow factor, as opposed to focusing on the reason people are actually there, which is actually to get scared. So, you know, I've never lost focus on that portion of it. So that's probably, you know, why most people think of us as the scary haunted house, which I'll take any day of the week.
So that's actually a really interesting point, I think, and definitely certainly a differentiator between you and the other sort of your competitors, I should say. So in your mind, what scares people? You know, how do you come up with these types of ideas, you know, without giving away the secret sauce?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to use lighting. I can hide people in plain sight. You know, people popping out of absolute nowhere is to me obviously scary. You know, people are always on edge walking through the houses when they, especially when they're introduced to those types of scares in the beginning. So again, it's all about just them never knowing where somebody's going to come from. And if that's the case, they're going to walk through and they're going to be really nervous, and it's just going to make the experience that much better. You know, and for the woods attraction, the Wicked Woods that we have, you know, I'd been when I was younger to woods, and you'd go down this path. It's roped off. You know, you've got these scenes, some witch brew in a pot and all this stuff. And, you know, what I wanted to create with the woods, again, going towards people's fears, was, okay, here's a flashlight to each of the group. It's dim, it's crappy, but they got a flashlight. I want to kind of create an experience. Okay, you know, there's no scenes out there. There's no paths roped off. Go find your way out of the woods. Oh, by the way, there's like 50 to 70 monsters out there hiding somewhere waiting to scare you. Good luck. So it's kind of just using people's, just trying to get people, you know, psychologically freaked out before they even start it, you know. And then again, too, you know, from every haunted house I do out there is different than the other. So I try not to have all 4 of them be the exact same thing. So the ways that I have to find scares with the 3D haunted house, because everybody's wearing 3D glasses, is a different tactic than I would do in the funhouse where I've got strobe lighting and everything. So it's all about, you know, and it's interesting when we built all of these, you know, while we had original plans, they were really built by just wall by wall, where we'll get to the next room, we'll put it up, and we're like, okay, we'll start walking through the scenario. Where would the best scare come from? Where do they think it's going to come from? That's kind of how we built everything in there, which was pretty cool. So it's kind of through the customer's eyes is how it was designed.
And so, Ryan, are you rebuilding the same experience every year, or are you reinventing it every year?
You know, I like to think of it as improving upon it, because, you know, it's interesting because I'll always get the question from people, you know, what's new this year? What'd you change this year? First of all, most of the people, I'm like, have you ever even been there? So, and the answer is usually no. But what it is, it's people get hung up on the fact that it has to be so different every year. What I like to do is always analyze what we're doing, use the customer's reaction experience, and improve upon it. This room's not working, let's change this room. This room's knocking that out of the park, I'm not going to touch it. Because the majority of the people who come, a minimum of 80% of the people have never been there before. So changing just for the sake of changing because I'm bored of it or something, you know, doesn't make sense to me. It's all about creating the best customer experience. And so every year when we build it, we do change things, but it's more strategic in nature than just doing it because.
And, you know, that's a really interesting point, and it's something that Craig and I talked about a little bit off air. It's, you know, how do you get customer reactions and which do you take seriously versus which ones, you know, you don't give much credence to? Because I imagine it's not a system where people can, you know, fill out a card at the end. I mean, maybe it is, but, you know, how have you gathered that feedback, and then how have you incorporated it?
So several different ways, realistically. So we've got infrared cameras throughout the houses, so I can follow, I can see how the throughput is, I can make sure that everybody's getting the experience I want, but also, you know, we can watch the scares, one. Two, I have the same people, my core group that helps me set it up, you know, they're house managers, so they're in charge of each individual house, and that's their responsibility. So they are following groups through on a regular basis, they're watching what's happening inside, coming up with recommendations, and we'll talk through it at the end of the night. And then also the actors, you know, they have suggestions because they're the ones inside working the rooms, and they'll maybe find a way that does a better scare that we didn't think of. And then we'll incorporate that, you know, into it next year. So there's several ways, because to be honest, customer reactions are interesting because we can follow a group through and they might as, you know, they had an absolute blast, scream the whole time. Those are the people that when they walk out, the first thing they say is, oh man, that wasn't scary, which is a complete lie. So
it's not what your cameras told us.
Yeah. So we've got this awesome horn blaster that will sit out the exits. And whenever somebody says that when we hit it, they usually always hit the ground. We're like, was that scary?
So Ryan, looking at your website, there's a lot of, I see a lot of creepy clowns. And I'm wondering, is that something you had planned, or are you guys reacting to all the clown hysteria in the country right now?
No, actually, I mean, heck, that's working out well for me this year. So going back in time in 1990, when my attraction was called the Haunted Crypt, and then when I expanded to Wildwood Water Park, it became the Haunted Crypt and the Haunted Mausoleum. Back then, everything was kind of like haunted this, haunted that. And then, so when I graduated college and I moved my haunted house attraction to Medina County Fairgrounds, which gave me the opportunity to grow it even more, that's when I rebranded everything in 1997 to the Carnival of Horrors, because I wanted something a bit more unique that stands out amongst the other haunted this, haunted that type of haunted houses. And obviously people's fears of clowns was a space that I could live and own, and then kind of just evolve and establish it. So it's not all we have there, but it's definitely something that helps us stand out. But yeah, you know, I get people emailing me this year. It's like, you know, do you have extra security in case, you know, one of those creepy clowns kind of goes in that's not one of your actors? I'm like, honestly, if that dude wants to do that, I consider that a free labor, so I don't really care. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about it.
So kind of to that point, I'm curious, in Ohio, what kind of laws are around something like this? I mean, can your actors touch the guests? Can they, you know, what's allowed, what's not allowed?
You know, I mean, the laws would be like for anything else. I mean, I don't want people, you know, my actors touching customers. To me, that's not scary. That's just annoying. and it also puts them at risk because you never know how somebody's going to react to those.
Yeah, that's true.
Things. I mean, you know what? It's dark. People get pushed around and stuff. Sometimes incidental contact happens, but, you know, doing things intentionally doesn't really lead to anything positive. I mean, I do know some of my competitors thought that was a cool idea and they tried to do this full contact and it just turned around and bit them in the ass because they, you know, their reviews weren't all that kind.
So with something like that, have you ever had someone, you know, throw a punch at one of your actors?
Oh, all the time. you know, so we're really good as a team, just either one spotting somebody who seems like they could be a problem in line. So the manager will follow them through the first house, you know, just kind of lingering in the back. If they seem fine, great. If not, we'll radio to the next one. Say, hey, we've got these people coming. You might want to follow them through. So we try to stop it before it happens. But oh, yeah, people do that. And, you know, I've got a zero tolerance for that. And I'll make sure they're escorted out of the park either by force with the sheriff or nicely with me.
Huh. So let's talk a little bit about marketing. So you have like a really limited window to make, you know, that this really works, right? So like what is your season? How long do you, how do you have people coming?
I am open 5 weekends, 14 days. That's it.
Wow. 14 days all year long. So when do you start marketing? When's the ramp up to opening day happen?
I would say now. I mean, if you want a little bit of a history lesson on how this, the marketing used to be to where it's come now. So back in the 90s when I started, you know, it was radio and the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the main newspaper in Cleveland, had the Friday magazine. You had to have the biggest, best-looking print ad in there because that was kind of the haunted house Bible. People would grab it, they'd open it up, they'd decide where they're going to go. And that was, from a marketing standpoint, that and radio, TV back then, you know, was just a bit expensive for haunted houses because, again, you know, budgets haven't increased, you know, at least my operating budget has increased as I've grown. But so flash forward to today or even, even 4 years ago, I have not been in one print vehicle for 4 or 5 years. It's, you know, I'll do TV, cable and network, you know, radio. And then now it's, you know, Pandora, targeting with Pandora, Spotify, although Spotify's got a minimum spend, but I tag onto Live Nation, who I rent the property from, to meet the minimum spend, outdoor, digital, et cetera. But a lot of it's socially driven. So the ramp up period for me, we start building September 5 this year, which would be Labor Day every year. That's when I start the social media platform, start pumping it out about, you know, using our television commercial, pushing it out there with boosted posts on Facebook, you know, Twitter, Instagram, et cetera. So that's really the ramp up. The ramp up social. And in two, back, you know, in the past, my flighting schedule used to be different. So people used to start making plans for where they were going to go to a haunted house much earlier in the week and then kind of already have that decision made, you know, by the weekend. You know, it's really shifted now, especially with social media and how everybody can communicate so fast and make plans so fast. Now my flighting schedule is really, really heavy on the days that we're open, Fridays and Saturdays specifically, when you're talking your more traditional media. So that I start up the week before we open. So we'll always open on a Friday. So I really start ramping up all the traditional media, even pumping up a bit more, you know, the social, the pay-per-click, et cetera, the week of.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously you're a professional marketer, right? Like I said up front, that you work in advertising marketing. That's how we originally met. So how did you develop your marketing plans? Was this just trial and error over time, or did you tap into industry trends or what?
Yeah, you know, I think I've just developed it over time. You know, a lot of it, as you know, in advertising, there's not an awful lot of data behind some of this stuff, you know, taking digital out of it. And a lot of it's a gut feeling for where my audience is, you know, what type of media they're consuming, how they're consuming it, when they're consuming it. So that's kind of where a lot of the shifting, you know, kind of happens. You know, and again, too, you know, from a messaging strategy, you know, I need to make sure what vehicle I'm using, I've got the right message on there. So even that shifts, you know, the when I redid my television commercial, redid the strategy for the radio message, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, you know, some of it's gut, some of it's research, some of it's data, you know, I've tried to have some people go out in the parking lots, do some license plates, and see where people are coming from, et cetera. But I'm just like, look, I'm shooting, you know, for me, it's more, you know, demographically, obviously geographically targeted, but demographically for a younger crowd. And I can just look at that data by walking up the line on a Saturday night. And if there's a 2-hour line, I've got 2 hours to see who the heck's in that line and figure out how to, you know, who my core audience is. And it usually skews younger. I mean, I really try to target 13 to 29. For the most part, but the majority would be 13, 21, and then second tier, you know, 21, 29.
Yeah, I was going to ask who your audience is. Sounds like it's well defined. I mean, this is definitely not a family activity, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of families do come out because who I'm also really going after is obviously the decision maker here, which is the kid, but the family is going to, in many cases, bring them out, you know, by proxy. So, so typically when I'll even go and do interviews on, you know, like an oldie station or something, or, you know, where I know my audience isn't, but I know their parents are, and then try to make sure that they feel safe bringing their kids out there. Cause you know, you never know what people do with some of these haunted houses.
Huh. So Ryan, how many people will you have come through your attractions this year, you think?
This is our last weekend. I'm hoping to hit 20,000 if possible.
Is that like 20,000 every weekend? That's total.
Although there's no way we'd get out of there. You know, for the past couple Saturdays, we've hit 3,000 and we stopped selling tickets at midnight and the last people get out of there at 2 a.m. Because the one thing I don't want to do is send people in a Congo line like a herd of cattle. You know, I'd rather stay open later, pay the payroll and everything, to give people the experience that they want. So we'll still break our groups up and run them through that way, as opposed to just, all right, let's just get everybody through and get out of here, because word of mouth in this industry is about as important as anything, especially now in the social media age. But it's always been that way ever since 26 years ago when I started.
So I feel compelled to mention that, you know, having known you, that you're a pretty average guy. You're not like a creepy weirdo that you might expect who would be, you know, running a haunted house. You're, you know, married, children, you know, house, all the normal stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that. You know, I've done lots of TV interviews and they had reported, like, hey, I'm looking for Ryan. I'm like, no, that's me. I'm like, yeah, sorry. I'm sure you're a little disappointed, but what do you want? So
is there a community of haunted house owners? Do you have, you know, do you communicate with your peers?
A few of them. Again, and you're right. You know, there a majority, I mean, you really think about this at its core, while it's, you know, it's credit, et cetera, you know, but it's kind of considered one of those cash businesses, seasonal businesses. There are a lot of people in the industry that I don't really see eye to eye with, just because of the way they treat their actors. And, you know, it's interesting. it was Monday. I look on my Facebook page and there's this, you know, this post from this guy, Rodney, and I forget the last name. I'm like, I wonder if that's the guy who owns one of my competitive haunted house. So I click on his thing. I'm like, yep, he owns the haunted house down the road, and he has to resort to trying to write negative stuff on my Facebook page. So, I mean, I don't engage in any of that kind of stuff, but there are a few, there's some good people out there, especially locally, you know, that I communicate with. But for the most part, to be honest, I don't really get into that world. We'll go to haunted house conventions to find what's new and, you know, get good ideas. But it's just me and my crew and I, you know, we just run our business the way that we want to. And I'm not too concerned about what other people do.
Yeah. Well, it's been really interesting talking to you about this, you know, this haunted house industry that I was largely ignorant of. By the time you're hearing this podcast, the show's probably wrapped up, but I encourage you to reach out to carnivalofhorrors.com, find them on Facebook, and get your money ready for next year. So, Ryan, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Sure, no problem. My pleasure.
So that's Thundercast for this week. As always, if you like what you heard, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever fine podcasts are sold. If you find us on iTunes, if you could take a second to leave a review, we'd appreciate it. Otherwise, you can always find more about our podcast at thundertech.com/podcast, where we have an entire library, or seek out more information about the agency at thundertech.com. All right. Thanks for listening.